Nick caught sight of a pair of small spotted deer and heard the peeping of tree frogs. A soft hum buzzed past his head as several dozen fairies zipped about the troop, chirping and doing loop-de-loops. A feverish shudder coursed across Nick's skin. A fresh flush of heat bloomed in his stomach. His fingernails bit into his palms as an overwhelming need to tear the little creatures to pieces all but consumed him. He felt if he could kill them, the pounding in his head, the heat in his stomach, would finally cease. No, he thought. Stop it. Stop it before it's too late. He clenched his fingers into fists, pressed his hands tight against his thighs, fighting to keep them under control. The wound began to burn again, worse than before. He clutched his side, felt the heat. He made sure no one was watching, then looked at his hand. His blood was darker now, almost black. Fuck, Nick whispered. A Barghest, much smaller than the others, loped up alongside of him. The creature only came up to Nick's knee. It gave him a curious look and chirped. Get the fuck away from me, he hissed and grinned. The Barghest cocked its head from side to side, then scampered away. Dig your beady little eyes out with my thumbs, Nick said under his breath. The heat in his stomach began to burn, to climb up his throat, the pressure behind his eyes to throb. Tear your flesh from your bones. Yes, the other in him said. Do it. Do it now. All the pain will go away. Just do it. Do it. Do it now. And at that moment, Nick believed that other, truly felt that killing the Barghest would make the pain go away. Felt it in his very core. The troop pushed around a bend, and Nick was confronted by dozens of tall, thin waterfalls, their silvery waters cascading down a mountain face of pure white stone. Nick tilted back his head, but couldn't find the top of the falls. The water appeared to be falling from the low-lying clouds themselves. The mist was cool, soothing, and smelled like spring. Nick inhaled deeply and felt a reprieve from that other, from that deeper self. For a moment, he stood there and just lost himself in the spectacle of the beautiful falling water. The elf led them to a smaller fall, the one farthest back. An inconspicuous path ran along a small ledge and disappeared directly into the falls. The water crashed down with such force, it was obvious they could go no farther. But the old elf walked directly into the falls and vanished from view. Peter hesitated a moment, then followed. One by one, each of the party entered until it was Nick's turn. Nick could see it wasn't a trick. There was just enough space behind the falls to slip past, but it was still unnerving to blindly walk into the misty shadows. Nick took a deep breath, stepped through, and found himself in a short tunnel, the walls shimmering with an emerald light, the color of the sea. The tunnel led into a large cavern that opened to the sky. Jagged cliffs leaned in on all sides. Thick, glowing bands of gold veined the white stone, bathing the cavern in a soft golden light. Before him, a magnificent Eden spread out from ledge to ledge, at least the width and length of a soccer field. The devils, Barghest, even the elves, all stared in wide-eyed wonder.
The haven, Tagnost said.
I see bunnies, said one of the witch's daughters. My, my, lots of bunnies, said the second. Yummy for your tummy, added the third.
Nick's breath escaped him. Before him lay a circular pond, delicate ripples crisscrossing its mirror-like surface as tiny sprites, barely larger than bees,
danced along its banks. An apple tree with white bark and leaves stood upon a tiny island in the middle of the pond, the centerpiece of the whole garden. Vibrant red apples hung from its delicate limbs, and its leaves shimmered.
"Avalok's tree," Peter whispered.
"Yes," Tagnost said, and even his voice was awed. "The very heart of Avalon."
A bird call drew Nick's attention away from the tree, and he took in the rest of the garden. Dozens of brooks fed into the pond, their sparkling waters bubbling over smooth, crystal-clear stones. Grass and clover of deep greens and blues, as rich as though it were painted, rolled across the glade, while lush ivy and muscadine vines dripped down from the delicate trellises and along the ledges and cliffs that walled the sanctuary. Wildflowers spilled across the grounds like waves in an ocean, splashing along the edge of every stone and tree. Massive moss-covered standing stones leaned heavily, their ancient pitted surfaces covered in runes and carvings of brooding faces. Brightly painted birds flew above, along with all manner of sprites, pixies, and tiny fairies. Wee folk of every sort peeked out from behind stones and giant toadstools. And on, there were so many sights, smells, and strange creatures about that Nick found it impossible to focus on any one thing for more than a second.
"My lady,"
Peter called softly, his voice reverent. Nick followed Peter's eyes to a tapestry of brilliant white vines, flowers, and leaves nestled together upon a throne of leaning stones on the far side of the pond. The overall effect was that of an elegant woman in a long gown. Nick realized that many of the leaves were actually white butterflies, some slowly opening and closing their wings, while others fluttered to and fro, giving the illusion that the tapestry was moving.
"She's in the pond," Dash said,
and all the devils pressed forward, trying to see her.
"I see her," said Redbone.
"Where? Oh!" said Cricket.
Nick searched the murky water. He didn't see her, but he did see small winged fish with the upper torsos of boys and girls darting back and forth, chasing one another just beneath the surface. Then he understood, and he saw her well. In the reflection, all the white flowers, leaves, and butterflies came together to form the lady. And, just like any illusion, once he saw her, it was impossible to not see her. He glanced back up, and there she sat on the throne, unmoving like a marble statue, staring with heavy, unblinking eyes at the tree. Her head nestled among the flowers, the vines and leaves spilled around her, cradling her. Her skin was so white as almost to glow, her neck long and graceful, her lips full but pale, her cheekbones high, her eyes set wide apart, almost too wide, giving her a slight animal countenance. And when Nick looked at those eyes, those dull, glassy eyes, he could see just how fragile, how very vulnerable she really was. And as the heat bloomed in his gut, as it turned to fire, as his blood turned black and pumped through his veins like venom, he thought, "It will do me such good to kill her."
"Lady Modron."
The name escaped Peter's lips in a weak breath.
"She's too thin,"
he thought, and couldn't push away the fear that she might be dead. He looked into her eyes, those ceaselessly staring eyes, and found no sign of life. Nothing. He walked softly up to her and laid Sikiyu down upon the spongy moss at her feet. He cleared his throat.
"My lady,"
he said gently. She continued to stare past him, through him, not so much as a blink.
Peter followed her gaze to the tree, still amazed to be in its presence. He noticed that many of the leaves were wilted, that some of the limbs were bare and looked to be dying. He wondered how much longer Avalon had. He fell to one knee, reached out, and laid his hand on the lady's, gently, as though his touch might break her. Her hand felt cold.
"My lady,"
he whispered.
"Lady Modron, it's me, Peter."
Her face never changed.
"Lady,"
he said again, then again. Peter felt a hand on his shoulder, heard Tangnost's deep sigh.
"I'm sorry, Peter. I was afraid of this. She still lives, but has gone from us, withdrawn deep within, keeping the mist alive, but little more."
"I cannot remember the last time she spoke," Drail said. "Maybe to Ulfgar. I don't know, for he forbade any of us to come near."
"Peter," Tangnost said softly, "I fear she's beyond us."
Peter continued to hold the lady's hand, to stare into her eyes, to hope. He felt a warmth against his chest, the 8-point star. He pulled the necklace over his head and examined it. The faintest glow pulsed from the star's center.
"No, she's still with us."
He reached for the lady's hand, carefully turning it upward, and laid the star in her palm. The star brightened.
"Lady,"
he called.
"My lady."
The lady's eyes closed, then slowly reopened. She looked at the star. Her lips moved. No sound came out, but Peter had no problem reading her lips.
"Mabon,"
she'd tried to say. Her hand closed around the star.
"Mabon,"
she repeated, her words little more than air. Her eyes became distant again, then slowly closed, and she was still. Peter waited, but the lady showed no more signs of life.
"My lady, it's Peter."
Still, there came no response. Peter stood, cleared his throat, and began to hum softly, then sing, slowly building up the song as his voice cleared. He found the old tune, the song of the sunbird, and as he sung, as his rich voice echoed off the tall cliffs, the birds and the fairies lent him their voice, and soon the tune drifted throughout the garden. Peter watched a lone tear roll down the lady's face. She opened her eyes. This time she saw him.
"Peter,"
she whispered, and reached out, touching his cheek.
"My little Peter bird, you flew back to me."
He nodded up and down as tears blurred his vision. Her caress touched so much more than his skin. He felt it to his very core, felt a warmth swell up inside him, as though they were still in that pond so long ago.
"Flew all the way here from Otherworld just to sing me a song,"
she said. Peter nodded absently. Her eyes found Drail, then Tangnost. She frowned, her face confused.
"You've come back too, or have I finally passed beyond? Ulfgar told me you were all dead."
"No, my lady," Tangnost said. "We're not dead, nor are you."
Peter barely heard them, their voices muffled by the beating of his own heart. He put his hand to his cheek. It still tingled from her touch. It was all too much. After 1,000,000,000 wishes, he was finally back by her side. He felt his heart might burst, felt his own will had been stolen, and he was now incapable of anything more than just staring at her, wishing only to bask in her presence forever. She looked about the garden at the devils and the Bargest. Her eyes fell on Sikiyu lying motionless at her feet.
Peter, who is this?
Peter tore his eyes away from the lady, saw the injured girl on the grass, and wondered who she was.
My lady, Tagnost said, a lot has happened since the battle at Merrow Cove. Avalon still holds. Peter has rallied the clans. Today he led...
Sikiyu, Peter thought. Sikiyu's dying.
And the world all came back into focus.
She needs your touch, Peter interrupted. She was wounded protecting Whisperwood.
One of your devils? She fights for Avalon?
Yes, Peter said. She fights for you. She bleeds for you.
Help me to the pond,
the lady said, pushing to her feet. Peter and Drail rushed up, taking the lady's arm around each shoulder. Gently, they eased her down a set of stone steps into the pond. She drifted away from the shore and slowly sank beneath the water. A light mist spread across the surface, and the water began to clear, slowly revealing the stony bed below. The lady resurfaced, and now there was a vibrancy to her eyes, sparkling, brilliant cerulean.
Bring me the girl, she said,
her voice clear and strong. Peter picked Sikiyu up. She felt lifeless in his arms, but she let out a slight moan, and he dared to believe that maybe, maybe there was still hope. He carried her down the steps and floated her into the arms of the lady. The lady pulled Sikiyu below, swimming away toward the tree. The mist thickened, swirled about, blocking the view below. The golden veins along the cliffs dulled, the cavern darkened. Then the mist began to glow, casting an eerie green underlight onto the faces of the elves and devils. They waited, the devils shuffling nervously from foot to foot, scanning the mist. Peter searched for movement, a splash, a ripple, any sign that Sikiyu was okay.
It's taking too long, he thought. Maybe the lady's too weak?
And he had a terrible thought.
Could this be too much for her? Could it kill her?
He wondered if he should dive in, try and find them before it was too late. The lady broke the surface, and Peter was terrified by what he saw. The lady's flesh had become gray, almost translucent. He could see every vein.
Take her,
the lady gasped, struggling to keep Sikiyu's head above the surface. Peter splashed forward and pulled Sikiyu to him just as the lady sank below the water. Peter hesitated, unsure what to do.
It's all right, Peter, Tagnost said. Water's her element. The pond's the best place for her now.
But the old troll looked anxious. The mist lost its glow. The water became murky. Peter would probably have continued to stand there had Sikiyu not let out a gasp. He rushed her to the bank. Redbone and Drail gave a hand and they laid her in the grass. The dressing was gone from her leg. The wound was still there, a long, deep cut, but there was no bleeding, no redness. It looked on the mend. There was color in Sikiyu's face. Sikiyu spat out a mouthful of water, coughed, then her eyes fluttered open, and she smiled weakly.
I saw Mother Moon and the stars. They were beautiful.
Nick stood in the shadow and watched the lady. She sat slumped on her throne, letting the flowers and vines cradle her as she listened to Tagnost go on and on. Peter stood at her side. Fawning, Nick thought, like a little boy. The color had returned to her skin, but she looked weak, worn out, except her eyes. They were alive, piercing, the eyes of a goddess. They scared Nick, and he made sure to stay well clear of her gaze. A laugh stole his attention. The devils were exploring the garden, picking nuts and fruit. The lady had insisted they eat their fill and gather what they could for their stocks. While the devils stuffed their berry-smeared faces, the Barghest rooted beneath logs and stones for fungus and grubs, hooting and barking at each other. A small white rabbit dashed by, followed quickly by the three sisters, giggling as they chased it into the bush. Sikiyu sat on the bank. She still looked weak, but was sitting up on her own now and eating away at the clump of muscadines Redbone had brought her. The fairies zipped about, gathering armloads of flower petals and dropping them atop the Barghest, chirping and giggling as the beasts growled and grumbled. Nick saw smiles, heard laughter, and it made the heat in his gut turn to fire. Oh, how fucking charming. How fucking magical. Nick's heart drummed. The hot black blood pulsed in his head, the pain overwhelming, like a nail being driven into his brain. It was her, the lady. She was doing it. Kill her, the other wailed in his head. And Nick no longer argued, no longer protested. Him, the other, his deeper self. They both shared the same burning black blood. They both wanted the pain to stop. Nick slipped the knife from his belt and edged toward the lady, careful to stay in the shadows. But no one was watching him. Stupid fucks, he thought. All too busy stuffing their faces and having a merry, gay old time. He clasped the back of the throne to steady himself, trying not to swoon as the pain grew so bad that the edges of his vision blurred. He could see her profile, the elegant curve of her neck. He clutched the weapon, thought how good it would feel sinking into her soft flesh. Yes, he thought. Make the pain go away. The mist, too. Make all of this horrible nightmare disappear. He raised the knife, preparing to drive it into her neck. She turned, such a simple, graceful movement, and locked her eyes on him, her hard, icy eyes. They held him, looked into him, deep into his very core. Nick heard the other inside him wail. He couldn't move, couldn't so much as blink as the tears began to roll down his face. She grabbed his wrist, and though she was thin and frail to look upon, her grip was like a vice, her touch cold, penetrating. Nick let out a small cry, and the knife fell from his hand. Peter and the troll exchanged a quick look, and Peter was there at her side. My lady, what? He asked, glaring at Nick, looking ready to slit him open. She didn't answer, just pulled Nick toward the pond, and Nick found it impossible to resist her will. Before he even had a chance to draw a breath, she dragged him beneath the dark water, pulled him down along the bottom. He knew she intended to drown him. The other in him screamed, and this time Nick screamed too. His lungs filled with water, and he had a moment of confusion, expecting pain, expecting to choke, to drown. But instead, the water was sweet. It filled his lungs like a breath of spring air, dousing the heat in his stomach and the throbbing in his head. Nick felt a pulse, but it wasn't his. It came from all around him. He made out several large twisting shapes spiraling downward, disappearing into the depths. He realized he was beneath the apple tree,
and that these must be its roots. He laid his hand on one, could feel the pulse, warmth sloshing as it pumped through the thick root like a great artery. She held his hand as they drifted downward. A soft glow came toward them, enveloped them, and everything came into focus. There were stars. The moon. He saw Avalon, not as it was now, but how it used to be. He was swimming above the forest like a fish, through the valleys and glades. He saw the sparkling lights of a million fairies, nymphs dancing around tall standing stones, centaurs galloping across pastures of wildflowers, and trees of every color glistening in the silvery moonlight. He saw the magic running beneath all things, a glittering aura, a fragile element that needed protecting. He reached for the magic, and it reached for him, blooming in his chest like love. He heard her voice, like a song, faint and far away.
I am your forest, your earth, your eternity. I am your life. I am your death. I am all things forever and always. Love me, love me, forever love me.
Yes, he answered, forever. She pulled him upward, toward the moon. It grew and grew. Then, all at once, he broke the surface. He gasped, coughed, and took in a deep lungful of air. Peter and the troll were at the steps, anxious and worried. The lady left Nick clinging to the bank, drifted away, disappearing beneath the dark water.
Don't go, Nick thought, and reached for her.
The garden blurred, wavered. He felt dizzy. Could want, wish, think of nothing but the lady.
Forever.
Chapter 18. Caliburn. Ulfgar passed beneath an arch with massive elk horns set into its peak, climbed the winding steps as they curved around the sheer face of the granite ledge. His thighs and his lungs burned, yet he didn't stop until he came face to face with the Hall of Kings, high above the valley. A domed chamber loomed before him, beckoning him, daring him to visit with the dead. He stumbled forward, catching himself in the arched doorway, the sweat pouring down his face in rivulets as he gasped to regain his breath. The stained glass ceiling bathed the chamber in a soft emerald glow, while the large oval windows provided the dead with a view of the valley below. The bones of 7 elven kings moldered within the 7 stone sarcophaguses spread out in a ring before him. In their center sat a longboat. Ulfgar glared at the dead kings, then slowly brought his eyes up until they were level with the boat's deck. The boat stretched nearly 20 feet lengthwise. At the bow reared a ferocious dragon figurehead, its red ruby eyes staring out the largest window, looking ready to sail away into the low-lying clouds. The boat had been built to be put to sea and set aflame, to take the Horned One to the other world, to Avalok. But Ulfgar had forbidden it. He'd made the elves bring the boat and the Horned One here. He'd not allow the Horned One to leave him, not while there were still flesh-eaters on Avalon.
I'm still here, Father,
Ulfgar said, his voice shaky, appeasing. He inched forward.
They've betrayed you. Every one of them. But not me. I remembered my oath. I alone am worthy of your blessings.
He leaned heavily against one of the tombs, studied the face of the elven king carved in relief on its lid. He traced a shaky hand down the noble features.
Traitor, he hissed. All of you, traitors!
he sneered, raking his fingers across the eyes, scratching furiously at them, but his fingers had no effect on the cold marble gaze. Hefting his axe, Ulfgar brought the blunt side down with a tremendous blow, smiting the face and cracking open the sarcophagus lid. He shoved the lid to the floor and stared into the hollow sockets of the dead king.
"You dare to look at me that way?"
Ulfgar's face twisted into a knot of rage. He snatched the skull from its cradle and dashed it to the stones, grinding the bones beneath his heel until there was nothing left but dust and teeth. He spun away, brought the axe down on the next tomb, then the next, and the next, bashing them apart, kicking and scattering the bodies until the chamber was littered in rotting tapestry, robes, armor, and crumbling bones. He tripped on the leathery carcass of some ancient lord and went sprawling into the rubble. He lay on his back, panting, a fine layer of bone dust pasted to his sweaty skin. His eyes darted wildly about until finally coming to rest on the boat. His lips began to quiver.
"I'm not a coward," he said,
and the tears rolled down his cheeks, cutting dark paths through the bone dust.
"I'm not a coward. I did not choose to stay behind. You made me swear, father. Have you forgotten? None cried louder for war than I."
He rolled over and crawled across the floor, raking through the bones until he reached the boat. He got a hand on the railing and pulled himself up, clinging to the sideboard as he glared into the face of the Horned One. A fierce death grimace greeted Ulfgar. The Horned One lay draped in a woolly elk fur, his parched, leathery skin pulled taut across his bones. Several necklaces of tusks and bronze rings hung in a tangle about his neck. The broken blade of Caliburn lay across his chest, clasped in his huge, bony hands. The horned helm sat low on his head, dark sockets peering out from within the slanted eye slits. The dark hollows bore into Ulfgar, accusing him.
"Do you hear me? Have I not proven myself? I alone still stand, still defend the tree."
The dark sockets mocked him with their silence. Ulfgar's eyes fell to the sword, and a sneer pushed at his face.
"I am worthy, father," he whispered,
and slowly reached out until his hand hovered above the hilt. He glared at the tiny, sharp spikes lining the grip, spikes that would bite into his hand and, if he were unworthy, would poison and burn him from the inside out. His hand began to shake.
"I am worthy,"
he hissed between clenched teeth and tried to force his hand upon the hilt, force himself to pick up the sword. Tears streamed down his face as his whole arm began to shake. Then a wretched howl escaped his lips and he yanked his hand away, clutching it to his chest. He slid back down to the stones, cradling his hand like a baby.
"Why did you leave me behind, father?"
He heard it then. Laughter, coming from all around him, echoing about the chamber. They were laughing at him. His father, the kings, all of them. He clasped his hands to his ears, and still he heard it, louder, as though they were all in his head. He let out a weak cry and half crawled, half stumbled toward the large open window. He hit the ledge, fell forward, just catching himself. He hung there a moment, staring down from the dizzying heights, and thought about letting go. How sweet it would be to be finished with all this torment. And he might have, but something caught his eye. Something that made the laughter stop and his blood burn. There, far below, parading through the courtyard as though he lorded over all, was the child thief himself, leading his band of traitors and brats. Ulfgar's knees buckled and he sat down hard on the window ledge. They'd seen the lady.
No, he thought. There's more going on here.
Somehow they'd awakened her. Because the girl was better, there was no denying that. He'd seen her before, when she was close to death, and only the lady could have saved her. He saw the baskets and sacks of fruit.
Thieves, burn forever, he hissed.
You've tainted the haven, desecrated the heart of Avalon, and she, Modron, has aided you, has betrayed Avalok himself.
Ulfgar stomped back to the boat. He glared into his father's face, into those deep, dark hollows, into that fierce death grimace. Ulfgar matched that grimace.
You favored the runt as well. Called him to stand by your side in battle, yet would deny me. Deny your only son? How is it that he is worthy when I am not? How? How, you hateful beast! Tell me! Tell me!
Ulfgar snarled and thrust his hand forward, grabbed the sword, tearing it from the Horned One's grip. He felt its bite, the sharp jabs as the spikes pierced his palm. The marks began to burn.
Go on! He screamed. Burn me! I dare you! But nothing will keep me from my duty, from avenging Avalok. Nothing!
The heat continued to flow into his body, but it didn't burn. The broken blade became light in his hand as a feeling of power possessed him. He felt his chest swell as the heat pumped through his heart, his veins and muscles.
See, father. I am worthy. Avalok honors me. Me!
Ulfgar grabbed the helmet by one of the antlers and tore it from the Horned One's head. He placed it on his own head and stared through the slanted slits at his father, at the ravaged remains of the once mighty warlord. He heard laughter, but this time it was his own. The Horned One's head fell against the sideboard and looked sadly back at him. A wind whipped up, blowing the bone dust across the stone floor. Ulfgar felt his senses awaken.
What is this?
He wondered, realizing he could sense the life around him. A couple of deer in the woods below, a host of fairies battening down for the evening, and
them.
He could sense them. Peter and the others, sense their spirit, their feelings, their joys, excitement, their
fears.
Then he understood more, that he could touch them, not physically, but with his mind. He grinned.
Child thief, you will pay. You will know what it is to suffer. And to lose all you love.
Peter felt as though he were in a dream, as though his feet barely touched the ground as they marched back through the lady's wood. He found it impossible to believe all that had happened this day, from driving the flesh-eaters back to ridding Avalon once and for all of Ulfgar's poison. But it was the lady who dominated his thoughts, ruled his heart. He could think of little else. He closed his eyes and could still smell her scent, honeysuckle and spring water. Peter, Redbone called and pointed. Look! Peter stopped and stared, dumbfounded. They all did. They'd come at last to the border of Mirkvjor, to Cusith Creek, back to the scourge-ridden woods. Everyone stared at the trees, at the fresh green buds that had sprouted out along a few of the gray limbs, and the occasional bloom here and there among the dead weeds.
Tangnost, what does it mean? Peter asked.
Tangnost set Sikiyu carefully down. He'd carried her the whole way back. The troll might be old, but he was still a troll, and, to him, she appeared to weigh nothing. Sikiyu hopped over to a rock and took a seat. Peter thought it'd be a while before she'd be able to fight, but she looked on the mend, and he couldn't help but smile.
Almost lost you,
he thought, surprised to find himself blinking back tears.
Been through too much, me and you. We're going to finish this thing together.
Tangnost touched one of the buds.
It means that the lady's back, the troll said. We have hope again.
The lady did that?
Asked Cricket.
Yes, Tangnost said. Peter has reawakened her spirit. She will tend Avalok's tree. If we can stop the burning, she might be able to stop the scourge.
And, Peter added, when we drive them into the mist, when we kill them all, then she will heal all of Avalon, right? Return it to its splendor.
Yes, most certainly, the troll agreed.
We must strike again,
Peter said, his voice brimming with excitement.
As soon as we can. We can't allow them to burn another tree.
He looked to the old elf.
Drail, what of you? Will you meet us at Red Rock come dawn?
I tell you this, the old elf said. The lady's guard will sit on the sidelines no longer. We'll be there, Peter. That you can count on.
Every elf nodded in agreement, their stern faces and hard eyes, all the oath Peter needed.
Good,
Peter said, clasping the elf on the arm.
Good.
He could hardly contain the urge to let out a crazy whoop. He turned to the three girls.
Will you stand with us? Can we count on Ginny's children?
The Barghest looked to the girls.
Will there be lots of blood? Asked the first. Enough noodly guts for all? Asked the second.
And eyeballs, don't forget eyeballs, put in the third.
Oh, yes,
Peter said, and returned their wicked smiles.
Brains, too. Plenty to go around.
I want to go,
said one.
Me, too,
chimed in the second.
Oh, most certainly, then, said the third.
But Peter?
Yes,
Peter said.
You'll have to ask our mother first.
Yes, said the second. Mother doesn't like for us to play with strangers.
Will you come ask her for us?
Asked the third, with big, imploring eyes.
I will, Peter said. Right away.
He addressed Drail.
Tomorrow then, Red Rock?
Agreed,
Drail said, and the elves started away. Back into the lady's wood.
Leroy, Danny, Cricket, Nick, you guys grab all the stock and head back to Deviltree. We'll be there as soon as we can. Tangnost, can you take Sikiyu and go with them?
Tangnost looked troubled.
Most certainly, but...
There's always a but, isn't there?
Peter said.
Peter, a word.
Only one? Why do I doubt that?
Tangnost frowned, tugged Peter over into the woods.
Peter, you needn't go. The witch will come. The girls, they're her eyes and ears. They are just playing a game.
I know,
Peter interrupted.
I have to go back to the swamp. I have to find Abraham's body before the flesh eaters do. I can't stand the thought of his head on their fort.
Tangnost was quiet for a moment.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Peter started away.
Peter?
What now?
Peter said with a sigh.
What about Nick?
Tangnost, when did you become such an old woman?
The troll gave him a sour look.
You saw him, he said defensively. The darkness, it had him completely.
The lady touched him. She healed him. You can see it in his eyes. Stop worrying so much. All is coming together. Avalok has smiled on us.
This didn't seem to placate the troll.
Okay. Keep a close eye on him if it makes you feel better.
Peter?
What?
Peter said, exasperated.
You were the one that brought them all together. You did that. If I didn't know you to be such a cretin, I'd believe the Horned One's spirit lives in you.
Peter smiled warmly at his old friend.
Is that a tear? It is. Why, Tangnost, you have turned into an old woman.
And Peter laughed, and when he did, all the devils grinned, because Peter's laugh was a most contagious thing.
How much farther?
Danny asked, for the third time in the last 10 minutes. No one answered.
How come I have to carry the apples? He groaned.
They weigh a goddamn ton. Cricket's only got mushrooms. How come she gets mushrooms? Mushrooms weigh like nothing. That's not fair. Hey, Cricket, how about we switch for a while, huh? How about it?
Cricket shook her head.
Aw, come on. Come on. Come on.
Jeezy fucking wheezy, Danny, Cricket cried. Do you ever stop bellyaching? Here, take the goddamn mushrooms already.
She jerked the sack of apples from him and shoved the mushrooms into his gut.
Just stop whining for 5 flipping minutes, all right? Okay?
Danny nodded sheepishly. Cricket stomped away up the trail.
Hey, Cricket, Danny called.
Cricket didn't answer.
You're a real sweetheart.
She flipped him the bird. Danny looked at Nick, bounced the bag of mushrooms between his hands, lifted his eyebrows, and grinned. Nick recognized the trail. Deviltree wasn't much farther. He'd be glad when they made it. The bag of fruit and nuts he carried wasn't light. Plus, the day was fading, the shadows growing dark. Nick didn't really care to be out in the night. There were no signs of new buds here, nothing but endless gray. Still, he sensed a current beneath the gray. It's the magic, he realized. The lady had opened his eyes to the magic. The hills around him felt like a winter woodland just before spring. The dark feelings, the heat in his stomach, were completely gone. He felt the fatigue of the long day, but his spirit was alive, as though the magic of Avalon and his body were at last in harmony. His thoughts kept drifting back to the world behind the falls. The flowers, the magical animals, the sweet smells, the hundreds of little fairy folk.
The lady,
he whispered. She consumed his thoughts, her cerulean eyes, her silky hair, her pale skin, so white as to almost be blue. Visions of her soothed him. He felt,
what?
Love? Yes, he realized, like a mother's love. Nick stopped dead in his tracks. A stab of guilt jabbed his chest.
Mom, he said.
He realized with horror that he'd forgotten about his own mother. She'd not just slipped his mind, he'd completely forgotten her. She seemed a distant memory, someone he'd known forever ago. It was as though the lady had
what?
Pushed his mother from his mind? Had taken her place somehow? He concentrated on his mother's face, and this helped clear his mind. All at once, the lady's words came back to him, raw and bare.
I am your life. I am your death. I am all things forever and always. Love me. Love me. Forever love me.
A chill ran down his spine. She's done more than healed me, he realized. She's woven a spell. He cut his eyes left and right, felt sure someone, something, everything was watching him. Nick realized he had to return soon, because Avalon was a seductive place, because goddesses were obviously jealous creatures that didn't compete for devotion, not even with mothers. Nick had no doubt that if he didn't leave soon, he'd never leave, and after a while all the memories of his mother would be lost forever. Someone jabbed him.
You better keep your mouth shut.
Nick started. He'd been so lost in thought, he hadn't noticed Leroy come up behind him. The others were ahead. Nick began walking again.
Did you hear me?
Leroy said, speaking low. Nick ignored him. Leroy's face twisted into a sneer.
Hey, I'm talking to you, asshole.
He jabbed his finger into Nick's chest.
You ever bring that bullshit about Abraham up again, and I'll kill you. Fucking kill you.
A flash of Abraham's face, his terrified eyes as he choked to death beneath the black water, came to Nick, all because Leroy hadn't taken the 2 seconds to pull him out of the bog. Nick felt anger. No heat in his stomach, no pounding in his head, just good old reliable rage. It swelled up in him, and all he could see was Leroy. Big, stupid Leroy, standing there sneering at him.
Fuck you!
Nick spat and slammed his sack into Leroy's chest, slammed his fist into Leroy's face, catching the bigger boy high on the cheek, knocking him to the ground. Both Nick's sack and Leroy's hit the ground, spilling fruit and nuts all across the trail. Leroy put a hand to his cheek, his eyes wide. Whatever he'd expected from Nick, this was definitely not it. His hands clenched into fists, and he started for his feet.
Enough!
Sikiyu cried from behind them. She stood on one leg, leaning against Tangnost. The troll cast hard eyes on Nick, scrutinizing him.
He attacked me, Leroy said. Look at him, he's crazy!
Sikiyu's eyes blazed, but she wasn't looking at Nick. Her glare rested on Leroy.
You do not have the right to even talk to him. Not after what you did.
Leroy's mouth fell open.
What? No, you got it wrong.
That bastard!
He jabbed a finger at Nick.
It's his fault. He knocked me into the bog. He's trying to pin this on me. Can't you see that?
The way Leroy said it, Nick felt sure he truly believed it had happened that way.
No, Sikiyu said, her words cold and flat. That is not what happened.
Leroy shook his head. His mouth worked, but he seemed unable to speak.
You should be shamed, Leroy. Sikiyu said. You should keep your head low.
Chapter 19. Murder. The shadows deepened and night came to the Lady's Wood. Ulfgar stood as still as a statue at the edge of the forest. He closed his eyes and opened himself to the night. He sensed the fish in the wading pool, the frogs. A lone fox, a pair of doves sharing a limb and cooing to each other. He sensed the bond between the birds, the love of lifelong mates. He pushed at them, told them to be afraid of each other, and felt the fear grip them, heard them flap away in different directions as fast as they could fly. Ulfgar smiled and turned his attention to the elven barracks. The ornate longhouse that stood sentinel in the courtyard next to the great hall. The elves were back. He could sense all 21 of them within the wooden structure. They were not so easy to read as the animals, but he felt their excitement as they prepared for battle. A door opened. A ray of torchlight flickered across the courtyard. 4 elves came out with canteens strapped over their shoulders and headed down the path past the wading pools. Ulfgar followed them to the ancient well and watched them filling the canteens. He hefted the broken blade and strolled toward them, not even bothering to hide his step. The elves caught sight of Ulfgar and pulled their swords. Ulfgar swung, meeting 2 of the swords mid-strike, smashing effortlessly through their block and cleaving both of their heads from their shoulders. One of the remaining elves landed a blow across Ulfgar's midsection, but his armor deflected the cut. The other slashed across his upper arm, cutting deep into the muscle. Ulfgar felt the heat of the wound and locked his eyes, his fiery eyes, on the elves, and in that moment he found their fear, seized upon it with his mind, managed to hold them with it long enough to slam his sword onto the head of the forward elf, cleaving his skull in 2, dashing the other in bits of blood and brains. He grabbed the remaining elf around the neck, dug his fingers into flesh, and picked him up as though the elf weighed nothing. He could so easily snap the elf's neck with 1 twist, but instead, he brought the black blade to the elf's eye. The elf saw the poisonous edge and clawed frantically at Ulfgar's hand.
"Why do you squirm so?" Ulfgar asked. "If you are true to Avalok, the blade won't burn you."
He touched the edge to the elf's cheek, made the slightest nick. The cut immediately began to blacken, to sizzle, to burn away from the bone like acid. Ulfgar felt the heat beneath his hand as the poison spread inside the elf, felt the gurgling as the sizzling blood bubbled up the elf's throat, pouring from his mouth, nose, eyes. Ulfgar held him, enjoying every last tremor, until at last the elf was still. Ulfgar dropped the elf, then examined the cut on his own arm. He was surprised to see that the wound wasn't deeper, that there was no blood. It had been a strong strike. Then he noticed that the wound was shrinking, healing before his eyes.
I am truly a god, he cried. I am the Horned One.
He sucked in a deep breath of the night air.
Time for the child thief to meet Avalok's true son.
Ulfgar walked the path through Devilwood without fear. He sensed the rare creature, and when he did, he told it to be afraid, and the beasts fled before him.
"Dread me," he whispered. "Dread my coming."
He searched the wood, looking for signs or trails that might lead him the right way, but more and more he relied on his senses, closing his eyes and seeking. Finally, he caught the faintest glimmer, like a spark, far in the distance, and as he homed in on that spark, he began to feel them, closer and closer, until he stood before Deviltree.
"The child thief's not here,"
he snarled beneath his breath.
"But she is, his dark-skinned bitch. I sense her pain."
A smile slowly snuck across his face.
"To take her from him, cut her into pieces, leave her head upon the spit, after all that fuss to save her, why, that would bring him to his knees."
He laughed.
"Give him a taste of what it is to lose that which is dear."
Ulfgar pushed on the door. It was solid and locked tight. He circled the tree, but found no way in. He just needed someone to slide the bolt. He wondered if he could make one of the children do that. If he could just push them
like with the doves. He closed his eyes and reached out with his mind, felt for them, grasping for a hold. He found the troll sleeping in the loft above. Ulfgar quickly moved on. The old troll was full of tricks and unknown secrets, and Ulfgar was afraid he just might touch him back. He located a girl, but she was too deep in sleep. Next to her a boy, but he too was in a deep slumber. Ulfgar found another boy, this one entrenched in dreams. The boy's mind fairly danced with them, and no matter how hard Ulfgar tried, he couldn't break through. He moved on, growing impatient, probing, searching, until he found something else, something very intriguing. A boy by himself in a small room. This one wasn't asleep, not by far. This one's mind was open, wide open. Ulfgar could feel the anger boiling off this boy. So much rage and hatred, both for himself and for them. The child was mad with it, and Ulfgar realized this madness left him open and so vulnerable. Ulfgar sent a thought, pushed it into the boy's head. Open the door. The boy didn't respond. Open the door. Nothing. Open the door. Ulfgar's brow tightened with frustration, and then, all at once, he understood the nature of this great gift Avalok had bestowed upon him. He couldn't control minds after all, couldn't make people do things they didn't want to. He could only push them, push the workings that were already in place, such as fear or hatred or jealousy. He probed again and found something good. Something he knew he could use.